Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Millennial Life. My name is Joe Cole, and this is my podcast. Thank you for listening. Today on the podcast, I have an old friend of mine, Kayla Lombardo. Yes, thank God a woman. I have been saying it for weeks that I've been wanting to have, or that I've been trying to get a female guest on the show, maybe talking about it too much, you know, as a shame-induced self-defense mechanism to not have you people who listen think that I'm a sexist or uninclusive. So because of that, I was very fortunate to have my old friend Kayla on to be a guest. We go way back, and we went to middle school and high school together, but actually we went to the same private school for kindergarten, which we talk about. So yeah, Kayla is the same age as me, and was always a stellar athlete and student growing up, which led her to Fordham University to play softball, and now she has a job at Sports Illustrated, which she will talk about. And yeah, so she's doing quite good for herself. And speaking of sports, this episode is coming out the Monday after the Super Bowl, so I hope everyone enjoyed that and had some good food and spent time with friends. I hope your team won, you know, whatever team you recently chose to root for, because your team isn't in, or because you don't care about football until it is the Super Bowl, and then decide to care, so you seem like you know what you're talking about. I'm a culprit of that a bit. But see, I have to speak very ambiguously about the Super Bowl, because even though this comes out the Monday after the Super Bowl, I recorded this before the Super Bowl, so I'm just going to say a few general things about what probably happened so that it seems as if I'm reacting in real time. So, yeah, how about that play, huh? You know, the one where Peyton Manning, he threw the ball and then the guy caught it, or that one that the guy didn't catch. Crazy. Oh, I really like that, the Doritos commercial, you know, the one where the guy really wanted Doritos but couldn't get them for some reason, so we feel bad, but it's funny. Or that strangely touching beer commercial that we didn't see coming, which makes it more emotional, you know, the one with the horse. or when Cam Newton scored and he cheered and displayed emotion and made subtly bigoted and racist people everywhere feel uncomfortable. Isn't that so dumb? That topic comes, in Louis C.K.'s new show, Horace and Pete. If anyone doesn't mind spending $5 for a brilliant piece of creative work, get it. It's so relevant and like nothing I've ever seen, and pretty much is like a live play that was just filmed like an old sitcom. Not that Louis needs my plug, but yeah, he pulled a Beyonce and just dropped this show on his website without it ever being known that he was making it, and self-financed it, which is crazy that people can do that now. But yeah, there's a part where people in the bar are talking about how Peyton Manning looks like what a quarterback should look like a senator with a busted nose from the 50s, and that Cam Newton has no humility, no respect, and that he showboats. And then one progressive guy at the bar says, "You guys are just afraid of an exuberant black man," which I thought was brilliant. Tom Brady gets excited on the sidelines. You see him, he's yelling, but it seems for him, it comes from like a negative, angry place. At least when Cam does it, it's like jovial, it's happy. If Cam Newton did what Tom Brady did, whew. But yeah, watch Louis' show. It's incredible. He's definitely a creative hero of mine. But speaking of creative heroes, actually, I talk in the interview with Kayla about Judd Apatow. I know I've talked about him a lot, and I keep saying the same thing about him, and I'm sure it's getting boring to you, so I apologize about that. I'll try to stop that. But yeah, let's get to my conversation with Kayla. We talk about her life and what she's trying to do for women in sports from a journalistic perspective. And we talk about women in general, and women become a significant part of the conversation. So yeah, here is my talk with Kayla Lombardo. Yeah, you know how to use one of these things.
I mean, kind of.
Yeah, just the best way is to just, I mean,
speak into it.
I always say to people, the best thing to do is like to pretend like you're about to kiss the thing.
Okay.
That's how close. But I am sitting in my bedroom with Kayla Lombardo, someone I haven't seen. Do you even know how long it's been since we've seen each other?
I think it's been since high school graduation, maybe almost 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah, that's crazy. But yes, Kayla Lombardo, I went to high school with her and middle school with her. And after deciding to do the show, I immediately started to think of people who I knew who were around my age, who were people that would be interesting to talk to. And you were someone I put down instantly because, well, I haven't been getting a lot of flack. I guess internally I've been giving myself a lot of flack for not having a lot of girls on. Mm-hmm. I have just had Sam and one girl from school, Lindsay, but there's other girls I've like contacted and actually interviewed another girl, and I lost the interview. Obviously, the interview that I lose is the girl. But I'm very glad that you're on so you can provide your female voice to the people and so that people don't think I'm sexist, because I'm not. And I love women, even though I'm a little scared of them.
I appreciate you.
Because you are better than us.
Oh,
and everyone's just fooling themselves.
I appreciate you trying to be inclusive here with me. A good step in the right direction.
So I was just catching up with Kayla. Like we said, I haven't talked to her in a while or haven't seen her in a while. And I was telling her a lot about my life, but I was forcing her to not talk a lot about her life because I wanted to save it for the podcast, right?
Correct, yeah.
So what are you doing currently?
Well, I have to add, first of all, that we did go to kindergarten together. So
we did.
And you were my date for eighth grade formal.
I was going to mention that eventually, but yeah, I remember asking you, and it was...
It was like in the hallway in passing.
Yeah, it was like in between periods, and there was like a bunch of people, but like it wasn't like they were looking at us, but it was like...
I just remember your head sticking above everybody else's in the hallway, and you're like, hey, Kayla.
Coming towards you.
You want to go to formal? I was like, okay, yeah, I guess.
You wore a light blue dress.
Yeah, I did.
I have a great memory. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a fun night.
It was fun. I don't really remember much of it.
I just remember being really hot in the gym. We were
was
all
it?
Sweating, yeah.
They had like, it was cool, like carnival with different countries, right?
There
was. Like,
I don't remember that.
Who cares?
We were 14.
Yeah. Wow, it was so long ago.
I know. But anyway. You want me to tell you what I'm doing?
Yeah, what are you doing?
I am on the news team at Sports Illustrated. So I work on breaking news.
Yeah.
Whenever things happen in sports, anything happens, mm-hmm. we write it up. And I'm one of those people who writes the stuff up.
So, what do you mean writes the stuff up?
So basically, I write like a 250 to 300 word post that appears on SI.com and it goes out through social media.
Wow.
And so that's.
So are these like articles or is it like.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can call that.
Is it more informational?
It's content curation. So we're not actually reporting the news.
Right.
We're. Reporting what other people have reported. We're aggregating the news.
Mm.
So if something big happens, let's say Peyton Manning, HGH.
Yeah.
Somebody else reports that news, but it gets released on social media and through the internet. So then we pick up that story.
Yeah.
And so as quickly as we can, we write that up. And then we do stuff on the back end of the website. We care a lot about SEO,
mm-hmm.
Just optimizing search. And
What is S what?
SEO, search engine optimization. So there's a lot of stuff on the back end of the website
yeah.
that we have to keep in mind. Stuff you don't see when you click on the article.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of part of my job as well, to be conscious of SEO and do stuff with the photos on the back end, cutting photos and
wow.
writing the copy and putting it all together.
That is extremely interesting.
It sounds better than I think it
yeah,
actually
you
is.
You used a lot of flashy words there.
So
are you
basically? I just write up stuff that happens
yeah.
as it happens.
Are you equally responsible? I want to talk more about your job later because I usually try to have a lineage with these things. But are you equally responsible of like putting out what has happened as you are with trying to find out what has happened? Like, is there a way in which you like scour the media to see what has gone on, or is there other people who do that?
It's kind of on like a rotating cycle. So sometimes I'll be on spotting. So what you said, scouring the media is spotting.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically sit on TweetDeck, and as soon as something happens, somebody will throw that into an Excel document,
mm-hmm.
and then whoever's on a writing shift will pick up what is put into the Excel document and write it. And then somebody on an editing shift will edit what that person produces.
Yeah.
And then there's a social media person who then tweets it all out. And this all happens in a matter of 15 or 20 minutes. So it's a very quick process and you have to be very precise. And of course, with news, it's all AP style that we use. Mm-hmm. So it's a specific language that's unique to SI.
And, yeah. I learned a little bit of that in my journalism classes at school.
Yeah. So you have to be kind of on your game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what happens if anyone messes up.
Oh, I mess up every single day, like without fail. Sometimes it's a bigger mess up than another. Like one time, I'll tell you this story. I was really trying hard to get a story out about Muhammad Ali. Something happened. I don't remember what it was.
Recently?
Probably, I would say like 5 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote the story up, mm-hmm. and I put a picture of George Foreman on the Muhammad Ali story. And so I put my name under the article.
Oh, no.
That's what we do. So pretty soon after, I was getting pinged on social media saying, girl, fix yourself. Check yourself before you wreck yourself, because I wrecked myself in that moment.
Oh, no.
And
Two different people.
Yeah, so that's just like
shit happens.
A daily occurrence.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when you're moving quickly through things. Mm-hmm. Anything can happen. But yeah, you know, it's part of life. But I learn from my mistakes. Living better to make the mistakes and early on than later on.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, people will make mistakes and have like this national, you're just starting out, so it's not like, like, oh my God, Kayla Lombardo made a mistake. You're exactly. still starting out.
Yeah, but then
it's
again,
not like it's Stephen A. Smith, even though he's made some mistakes.
But it's still Sports Illustrated, so there's like this expectation for greatness.
Pedigree.
So if you're not on your game, mm-hmm. you're going to get called out for mm-hmm. it. Because it's, of course, I mean, it's mm-hmm. important to do your job well, especially mm-hmm. at a place that's got a good reputation.
Right.
You don't want to tarnish that.
Right. Well, I'm assuming that anyone who's listening to this is thinking, wow, this woman is well spoken. She seems like she knows what she's doing. I wonder where all that came from.
Thanks.
So like I said, you grew up here. Were you born in Pequannock?
I was not born in Pequannock. I think I was born in Ridgewood.
Ridgewood
Valley Hospital. Yeah.
Have you lived here all your life?
Since I was two. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been quite a while. On the plains.
What did your parents do?
Well, my dad is a contractor. He has his mm-hmm. own business. So mm-hmm. we've lived in Pompton Plains since I was 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we live on the boulevard. I don't know if that's too much for a podcast.
No.
But I went to North Boulevard School.
You want to give out your phone number, too?
Yeah, give out my social security number. No, I went to North Boulevard, I went to PV, went to Pequannock, mm-hmm. and then I went to Fordham University. So I've been local my whole mm-hmm. life. Fordham's only like 45 minutes mm-hmm. from home. So I haven't really gotten out a whole lot, even though New York City is like a different world.
Yeah.
And I was just telling you before that it's, I think it's time to like see new places and check out some new things, but we'll see.
So you just live with your dad, correct?
Correct, yeah. For now. And then I'll probably...
Growing up too, though, you did, right?
Yeah, I lived with my dad growing up.
Are you... I mean, speak to only what you want to speak to, but are you in any way generally willing to speak as to why that was?
A lot of stuff happened in my family and my mm-hmm. life mm-hmm. as a younger girl.
Mm-hmm.
My dad and I have a very unique relationship. Mm-hmm. My dad raised me. I'm the daughter of a single father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been great. You know, people think that, oh, it's sad if, you know, your mom's not in the picture, but mm-hmm. it's been good for me. It's mm-hmm. been something that has helped me in my life more than it has hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, my dad was really into sports. And I played softball from the time I was little. I played a lot of sports when I was little, but softball was always my favorite, and I loved the Yankees. And so that kind of combination fueled what I do now. I wouldn't be where I am right now if it hadn't been for my relationship with my dad mm-hmm. and what I was exposed to growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, that's interesting because I mean, the cliche is that when you think of like an estranged parent or like an absent parent, like the cliche is that dad isn't around usually.
Yeah.
And then in turn, the son of that father or the son of the father who isn't around is negatively affected in the way of not having a paternal figure there to teach him what it is like to be a man and how to grow up to be a proper man. Did you ever have to battle with like, not insecurities necessarily, but insecurities or like the questioning of, am I going to be able to grow up to be a quote unquote proper woman without a maternal figure around?
I never felt like I went without in my life. So no, I always felt like I had everything I needed from the time I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
My dad did a great job of making sure that he was like a mother and a father to me and mm-hmm. that he gave me everything that I needed, whether it be a house or a dog or a normal life. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I always had friends too, girlfriends who I always felt normal around. Yeah. But no, I think I always had a natural instinct for certain things as mm-hmm. a female. And I certainly loved sports and I loved being an athlete, but I was always girly too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're born with certain things inherently
mm-hmm.
and you're able to capitalize on certain things that you just have naturally. Mm. And I always felt just fine growing up. I never felt different or like I went without.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously me asking that is not a product of me thinking that that was happening, but like sometimes internally people think of things that don't necessarily aren't always shown. And I didn't know you until sixth grade, so maybe you were struggling with that at a young age. I don't know, questioning like, or not questioning, but realizing like, oh, I have a single parent. This is different than everyone else. Most people have two parents. But obviously, you inherently seem to be a strong person, and not like you overcame anything, but you were able to appreciate what you have and realize that you are blessed in the way that you are and that you had a father who loved you and still be able to be the complete person that you're meant to be, which is obviously evident now that you are a great person and that you are a good product of whatever your being raised was. But yeah,
that's, yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. And you know, I had a great earthly father, and I also I have a great heavenly father too. So I have been very blessed in my life, and you know, I think that God gives you what you can handle. Mm-hmm. And I know that based on certain things that have happened in my life, it's made me stronger. It's made me more independent. And those are qualities that I know that I need to succeed, especially for what I want to do in sports. And some of the things I'm passionate about in sports require some resilience. So, and we'll get into more of that later. But mm-hmm. I think that I've been equipped with certain abilities based on what I've gone through, and I'm thankful for those things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm blessed.
Yeah, and I see it's interesting to me, and I don't mean to beat this with a dead horse, but you have this like kind of this enlightenment of like seeing the positive of everything, or at least that's what you're exuding right now. And like that's something that I struggle with, and like I'm oftentimes pessimistic, and oftentimes kind of like take the worst of a situation. But like, was there ever a resenting of like not having like a negative thoughts of not having a maternal figure? Or was it like, or was it always, I have what I have, I'm going to make the best out of it?
Well, I can't tell you, it's been rainbows and butterflies forever. Yeah. I mean, life is hard, things happen,
mm-hmm.
but in life, in sports, in jobs, if you get hit, you need to get up, you need to keep going. And mm-hmm. it can either make you or it can break you. And I hate using these cliches because I hate cliches. As a writer, I'm told not to use them. But speaking to you, I guess I'll make an exception. But I kind of, as a result of certain things, I enjoy challenges. I enjoy
mm-hmm.
taking the road less traveled
mm-hmm.
because I know that out of that struggle, there is tremendous triumph.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been knocked down in my life with sports, especially with softball. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you fail
physically, and
it's a game of failure. Mm-hmm. So you know, whether it be stuff I've been through in my personal life or in sports,
mm-hmm.
it's just what I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's not that way, if it's not challenging, it's boring. So
right.
I want to keep working towards something. And mm-hmm. I think that this is pertinent to the podcast topic of mm-hmm. life after college, because mm-hmm. for me, I think one of the biggest struggles after college has been the fact that there isn't something that I am specifically working towards right now.
I've said that so many times.
Right. So for me, with softball, mm-hmm. and I played Division I softball at Fordham, I was always on a mission. Whether mm-hmm. it be December or June, I was thinking about the next pitch that I was going to see,
mm-hmm.
and I was obsessed. So whether that be training or studying film or thinking about it, it was just something that I craved. I wanted that ring, the next championship.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with high school and school and career. Mm-hmm. And it's always been something that I needed to attain.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I have my job, and now that I have my degree, and now that I have my championships from mm-hmm. school, what is this next thing?
Right.
So
I've talked about that. In school, there's like these markers for you to work towards. There's like a finish line. Whereas like when you get out of college, it's like kind of, it's ambiguous. The rules are, there are no rules. You have to like find your own way and realize that everyone else is doing that too. But like the path is not set for you as much. You have to make the path for yourself, kind of. And that's a little disconcerting, especially for someone like me who like, it's not necessarily that I need structure, but I need to know what the end goal of something is to get there. Where right now the end goal is up to my own decision making. But yeah, I was going to talk about that. In school, I would resent you. I'd be like, why is she trying so hard? Like
me, really?
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, I thought I was fucking cool. I was like, I don't want to try in school. And now I resent you for another reason, because I'm jealous that I didn't try. I'm like, oh my God, I wish you tried. What instilled you in that? Or how did the diligence and the vigilance of like wanting to be the best you could be, and always working to be the best, whether that be academically or athletically, where did that come from? And what was the mindset? Like you started to explain a little bit, but why do you think that was?
My dad likes to call it the fire in the belly.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always just been fueled to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it be just therapeutic for me, just based mm-hmm. on certain things I've been through in my life with my mother and certain things that have happened, it's been an outlet for me. It's mm-hmm. been an escape. So you saw this girl in school just being relentless with, and over the top, and admittedly over the top. I look back in retrospect and I think, what was I even doing? Like I could have enjoyed things so much more.
Yeah.
But maybe not. Maybe the enjoyment for me is in the struggle, is in the road, and the journey is the destination, you know? Like for me, like I loved feeling like, you know, you think I can't do something, I'm gonna show you I can do it. Like mm-hmm. I need to, for myself too. It's not even for anything other than just this own personal satisfaction that I get, and mm-hmm. I would get from defeating a pitcher who was supposedly really good,
mm-hmm.
you know, the challenge of saying, I'm going to get a hit off of her, mm-hmm. or going into an AP class that I knew that I didn't deserve to be in,
mm-hmm.
but I had to study harder than anybody, or go in earlier, mm-hmm. and maybe being neurotic, but it was just this fire inside of me that was,
you said, instilled
was sparked
in you by
certain things that had happened. So. Mm-hmm. I always wanted it to be, I never wanted to be different. Like I always just wanted to feel like no matter what had happened in my life, that I wasn't going to let that slow me down or hold me back. And I was going to prove people wrong. And so I guess I've just had like this chip on my shoulder my whole life that, you know, I needed to do more, because I mm-hmm. wanted to get the most out of myself, and I wanted to get more out of my situation than I was supposed to, type mm-hmm. of thing. So it's always been deeper than what you've seen on the surface.
Yeah.
Oh. And I guess a lot of people don't know that about me, because I'm kind of
internal,
shut off. And yeah, I'm a bit of an introvert.
Mm-hmm. Same.
I draw into myself a lot, and I always have, but mm-hmm. I've never liked to expose a whole lot about myself. So I'm actually surprised I'm talking about this right now, but I guess that's the art of good question asking.
Oh,
but,
well, thank you.
Yeah, so what you see isn't always what you get with me. There's a lot more there than what meets the eye.
Yeah, oh, how the chip on the shoulder can drive people. I mean, if anything, I've learned, like, you know, the beauty of podcasts and the reason I started wanting to do this was because of like a fascination with them and people connecting with each other and talking and exposing things that they wouldn't normally expose to people in their everyday lives, but like somehow for some reason they're deciding to expose them while microphones are in front of their faces. But one thing I've learned from listening to a lot of people and a lot of the types of podcasts I listen to are people talking about their lives and how they got to where they are now. And it's, yeah, the biggest driving factor is chip on the shoulder, having something in your past compel you to want to do the things that you're doing or compel you to have that sense of drive. Like, for example, I've talked about before, Judd Apatow, who's writer-director, and he would say, like, his life was shit. How do I make it not shit? Like, so he would always be like, I don't want this to be the thing that is my entire life. And yeah, I mean, things that happen in your past propel you to. So I guess when there's people who are given everything in life and like really don't have to fight for anything, it's harder for them sometimes.
Yeah, and it actually makes me think of Ronda Rousey, believe it or not. I'm reading her autobiography right now, and she kind of has a similar story to what you were just saying. Mm-hmm. She lived out of her car, and she has had to scrap and claw for every single thing that she's gotten in her life. But now she's Ronda Rousey. Mm-hmm. So I like those stories. I love those stories, actually. And I've heard, you know, I don't love Tom Brady. I hate the Patriots, but I respect him for similar things he's been through. You know, he was cut. He was relegated to less than the best, and he's always played with this chip on his shoulder, and it's made all the difference in his life.
So you were happy they lost?
Yeah, I despise the Patriots. I'm a New York girl.
Yeah,
largely because I despise the Red Sox, even though it's a different sport, because I'm a Yankee fan till the end.
But Sam, I got that poster up there.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice.
Even though it's of a man who is no longer playing.
He'll always be playing.
We're talking about Derek Jeter. When he retired, I was like, I'm getting old. That's the first thing I talked about.
I cried that game.
Yeah.
The last game at Yankee Stadium.
You're a bigger fan than I am. Oh, how amazing. How picture perfect.
It makes you think that it was fixed, that he just like tossed it over the outside corner just so he could throw his arms at it. But no, I miss him. But
yeah, he was the shining light of what an athlete should be.
He was.
But anyway, so yeah, you tried really hard in middle school and high school, and it paid off because you got into an amazing school, Fordham University, right? Bronx, New York.
BX, you know.
Right next to Arthur Avenue.
Oh yeah.
Did you splurge on that amazing Italian food?
What do you think?
I mean, it doesn't look like it. You're fit as can be, but oh my god, I would have blown up. I would have been there every day.
Well, we were working out so much.
Oh, that's true.
With
yeah,
the team. So.
Oh, and you played softball.
I played softball.
How was that? Being an athlete, was that hard? I talked to Alec and Kyle and Ben about that, and Kevin Gilmartin.
Yeah, I mean,
and you were on the D1 level. They were D3 and D2, and that must have been very arduous to have that.
Yeah, I mean, it was at first. I think it was harder than it was towards the end, just because I got used to it. But I loved it. I loved being challenged again by it. And when I first got there, I thought, I can't do this. There is no way. Because my freshman year, I didn't play.
That must have been hard.
Oh yeah. And yeah, you know how I am too. Like I can't deal with that. So you know, I thought that it wasn't the right fit for me at first. I thought that softball always was just a way for me to get into a good school. That's how I always looked at it from the time that I was younger, that I was going to use it as a way to get me into a better school than I could have gotten into by myself. that didn't work out for me.
Yeah.
So things fell through. Certain schools I was looking at, and Fordham presented me with an opportunity to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it, even though I wasn't looking for that opportunity. And I got there, and it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. First of all, Division I softball was way harder than high school softball was. And it was
just
hard.
Just the level of play, you mean?
The level of play and the what was expected of us. 4 hours a day of softball and classes. And mostly for me, it was the workouts that were the hardest because I went in as like this skinny little nothing who had never lifted a weight before. Mm-hmm. And I thought that I was fine and I was just going to be okay. But mm-hmm. then I was, you know,
proven wrong,
sore for the next 6 months. Like it was insane. But it built a lot of character and it gave me more hunger than I've ever had in my life to work hard. So mm-hmm. that summer after freshman year, my dad and I didn't even go on a vacation that summer because we practiced every single day. I played travel ball. I went to the high school field with my dad every day that summer mm-hmm. to work because I hated sitting on the bench my freshman year.
Yeah.
Hated it. Like it would tear at my soul. I was a different person my freshman year because I wasn't doing what I loved and I wasn't able to show my coach what I could do. Mm-hmm. Like she didn't really believe in what I could do and mm-hmm. that killed me. So we got to work and figured it out, and then I found my way onto the field my sophomore year. I played third base.
Wow.
And
didn't you play catcher in high school?
I did. Yeah. Yeah, and I played third my sophomore junior years, and then I caught my senior year.
Wow.
So it ended up working out. We won 3 straight conference championships my wow. sophomore, junior, and senior years. And we made it to the NCAA tournament all 3 years mm-hmm. and got to play on TV and played in some really cool places. So
wow.
it was an awesome experience. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. I don't even think about the fact that I didn't have a freshman year because I didn't get to play. I mm-hmm. am just so thankful for the 3 years I did have because it really did make me who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I carry with me every single day. I think about it every day.
Yeah. Besides the fact of like how strenuous like the routine of being an athlete was, a positive aspect of it, especially coming right into college, is when you come into college, you have this whole idea of trying to rebrand yourself, and it's like a clean slate, and you are surrounded by a completely new environment. So even though So you're changing yourself and you're also changing your environment. So sometimes you can get lost in not having like a group of people or like a community to be a part of. But when you're an athlete, you're immediately kind of put into this community of your team. Was that easy? Was that like a noticeable benefit for you when entering college of having these girls that you were a part of something?
That was the best thing yeah. about my college experience. Mm-hmm. was this group of girls around me mm. who were my family, who it was just like this different feeling when you get to put on every single day when you wake up and you put on your practice clothes, and we have a practice uniform that we would wear, and we'd all walk around campus with our bats, and like you just felt like nobody was gonna mess with you. Like even as a freshman, like you're just like in this different type of sorority that yeah. other people are in mm-hmm. and you're struggling together every day. You're in the trenches. You're going through all this stuff for the same goal. It's the coolest thing ever. And then to be able to put it together and get on the field and freaking kick butt, like win a championship, it is the most gratifying thing to be able to do it with the people who you struggled with and who you love. Like mm-hmm. My best friends in this life are my teammates, are girls I graduated with.
Mm-hmm.
And just because we're separated by distance,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't affect our bond that we have, because we have something that other people who had the same university mm-hmm. on their diploma, they don't have. And I'm sure every sports team has that, but you know, I'm biased to my own, and I ride with my team till the end. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Kind of get a little choked up here. That's awesome, because yeah, something I struggled with going into college at first was like not immediately having like people to rely on. Obviously I had Stav and I had Divine, who I've talked about, but it was like, wow, I have to make this whole new thing that I had. It's like completely starting over of being a part of something. So yeah, that's awesome that you're able to do that. But and I hate asking general questions, but what other parts of your college experience do you are like noteworthy for you, or what other parts like do you look back on with fondness, or not necessarily fondness, but that were pivotal in your experience?
Well, softball, of course, was such a big part of my life. It was an everyday thing.
What was the did you do like television sports stuff? Like, what was your major? What did you?
I was journalism. So I was communication and media studies with a concentration in journalism.
Yeah.
A minor in marketing.
Did you do like news stuff, like television stuff through the school, or were you too busy with sports?
I was way too busy with softball, but yeah. I did stuff on the side. Like yeah. I always did my own. I had my own blog, and I blogged my whole experience with softball. So I blogged my last 2 years of playing. Every single week I would write as we were traveling on the road, because we played 60 games in the season. So we had a lot to talk about, of course. Mm-hmm. And then my senior year, I got to write for ESPNW. I got to blog my season for ESPNW, which was a really cool experience.
How did that happen?
I reached out to them and I pitched this idea and I said, hey, I think this would be a good idea.
You and your initiative.
Yeah, maybe some craziness in there.
But, no, not definitely not.
But it was cool. And
Termination.
I got a GoPro camera for Christmas that year. So every time I wrote, I attached a GoPro video of the week with it.
Oh, that's awesome.
I would film my team as we were going through stuff, whether it be like outtakes or whatever, just like fun stuff. And I'd slap a cool song onto it. And then I'd upload it to YouTube and attach it to my blog along with some pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So it really gave the readers the full scope of what we were going through every week in the journey too. And it was cool because the whole goal, that what I had in mind before it happened, was that, hey, we have a really good team this year.
Yeah.
And we've won the past 2 years. There's a good chance we're going to win again. So I want to take people through this ride from January until May, because so much happens in the course of a college softball season. Like, it really, I hate to once again be cliche, but it parallels life so much. Like, you can be on a 10-game losing streak, but in the grand scheme of things, because you play 60 games, it really doesn't matter all that much. You can end up with 20 losses and still have a great season, consider it a great season.
Right.
So we went through the valleys ups and the downs. Peaks, and you know, you play such a tough schedule in the beginning of the season. Our coach throws us to the wolves. So we played like a top 25 schedule in the beginning, and then we get to our conference schedule and it's a piece of cake because we've seen the best in the country. So as a result of playing those teams and losing to those teams, we had a lot of stuff that we went through, and right. I was just fortunate enough to be able to document that, and to be able to look back on it too is cool now to reflect.
Yes.
And like, I've had teammates text me in the middle of the day recently saying, I just cried, I just watched our whole season. And now they're sitting at their office jobs, and it's a little memento for them to be able to remember certain things we went through. And then to see it culminate in a championship is exciting, because you see us go through like these hard times, and I interview my teammates and they're like, oh, you know, it's been rough, but we're keep on going, and then we're hoisting the trophy at the end. So it was really a cool thing to be able to see from start to finish, to be able to document.
Wow. And yeah, definitely a cool thing. So other than you making that thing a product of that, you like having this satisfaction and it being good for your soul, did it have any other benefits? Was it like, did people in the business notice it? Or how did you get the Sports Illustrated job? Because you said you didn't do that much of that type of work within the school. So like, it just like applying?
No, I didn't do a lot with Fordham, but I always did stuff outside of Fordham. So
oh, yeah,
I
like
wrote
what?
For AOL Sports. I wrote for, like I said, for ESPNW. I wrote for Knicks Now, which was the Knicks official website. Like, I did some like blogging stuff for them. And, you know, I had internships. I interned at SNY one summer. I interned at NBC Sports Radio. I did some freelance stuff around here. I wrote for the Suburban Trends. So I was always writing. I had my own blog. And I would, with my blog especially, I would reach out to people and just go for it. Like, I would reach out to people like I was a professional journalist, just mm-hmm. doing it on my own.
Like who?
I love women in sports. That's like my beat. That's mm-hmm. kind of what I'm into. So
yeah,
you know, I reached out to Jessica Mendoza and who is the female broadcaster now on ESPN. She does Sunday Night Baseball. But mm-hmm. before that happened, she's a Olympic softball player. So I wrote a story on her and some other people who were softball players and then transitioned into broadcasting. I wrote stories on basketball players and some stuff on Fordham. But mm-hmm. Yeah, so I did a lot of stuff on my own, not mm-hmm. specifically through the school. Mm-hmm. And the Sports Illustrated thing happened actually through my boyfriend. He helped make it happen. My boyfriend, DJ, he's a broadcaster. He was a broadcaster at Fordham. So he would actually call my games, my softball games.
Oh, wow.
Funny stories there. Yeah. He is a sports broadcaster.
For what? For who?
He works for CBS Local Sports now. He does his own radio show. He hosts a radio show there.
What did he do?
He was a student with me at Fordham.
You said he works at CBS Local Sports.
Works at CBS Local Sports now, but he also calls games on the side. So he does games for MSG Varsity now.
Like play-by-play?
Play-by-play, yeah. Yeah, so he calls football and basketball games.
How old is he?
He's 22. He's the same age as us.
Oh, I would love to talk to him.
Yeah, he's a good talker. And so anyway, he took a class with somebody named BJ Schechter, and he is a producer and an editor at Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. And so he connected me with BJ, and then I spoke to BJ on the phone, and I stayed in touch with BJ. BJ said, make sure you apply for the internship in November. And this was in June. I was on the phone with him. So I like updated this guy too much. Like I was up his butt about everything. Just like, hey, I wrote this story. Check this out. Whatever. I'm doing this, doing that. Mm-hmm. Just too much. But anyway, he told me to apply in November. I applied in November for an internship.
Of your senior year?
Yeah. For the SI internship for the summer. And I didn't hear back until April. Like, it was so grueling for me. I was just hanging in the balance for...
You eventually, like, leave your head and you stop worrying about it? Or was it a six-month thinking about it constantly?
Oh, it was an existential crisis every single day. Yeah, it was...
Oh, that's great.
It was rough times for a while.
I'm just turning this time thing on so I know how long we've gone. Okay, cool.
So, yeah, it was rough. And it was during my season, too. So I was going through this whole... internal struggle of, should I go to grad school? Should I pursue coaching? Should I pursue nothing having to do with journalism? And mm-hmm. I mean, I still struggle with this because mm-hmm. you probably know this. There's a million things you want to do in this life, but mm-hmm. there's just not enough time to do it. But anyway, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I heard back from the guy like the end of April. So here I am ready to graduate. And I finally got word that I had this internship and I was going to be starting my internship June 1st.
Of summer post senior year.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And so this whole thing had been in the works for like a full year before I knew that it was going to happen. Uh-huh. And we went to the NCAA tournament and we didn't get to graduate with our class. We had a separate graduation. We missed graduation mm-hmm. for softball. So I don't think I graduated until like May 18th, 19th, something like that. So I had like a 10 or 11 day stretch after graduation. And then I started my internship on June 1st in the city. Mm-hmm. That was 5 days a week. All summer long. And then at the end of my internship, I realized that I wanted to stay at SI. I wanted to work there because I wanted to, there was a lot of ideas I had for women's sports coverage. And I pitched some of those ideas. And I knew that if I left, that it wouldn't have, some of the stuff I wanted to happen wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. So I pretty much asked for my job. I went to the guy who oversaw my internship and I said, I want to work here. Do you have a position open for me? And he said, well, yes, we do. And I said, I would like that. So I got on with the Wire team, which is really, it's just a bunch of kids our age who are really into sports and sports media. Mm-hmm. And it's an entry level at SI. It's like pretty much like the lowest you can get at SI, but it's a foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like I said, I pitched some stuff and I really would like to see that stuff through. So
what was some of the stuff you pitched?
Well, I pitched a women's sports vertical for SI. So what that means is like it would be a separate website, kind of like MMQB. Do you know what that is? MMQB, it's Monday Morning Quarterback. That's a big website affiliated with SI. Mm-hmm. So it would kind of be like an ESPNW, but for Sports Illustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And while things have been kind of slow moving with it, just because, you know, I'm kind of the only person advocating for this type of thing,
mm-hmm.
I'm still plugging along, plugging mm-hmm. away at it. So that's my dream. That's what I want to see happen there. And I kind of want to be the person to help make that happen.
Mm-hmm. When a lot of the times when people get done with college, like we said, the biggest struggle is not having something set for you, like definitive, and having to make the rules for yourself. Was it reassuring in knowing that you're going to immediately have work after, or was it like, is this the right thing? Or were you like, oh, I'm set. This is awesome.
Oh, no. Cause it's not glamorous. I mean, it sounds better than
Sports Illustrated because people know what it is.
Yeah, but it's an entry-level position just like any other entry-level. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to grind it out. You have to work some hours that are worse than you would like to. Mm-hmm. And the pay sometimes, you know, it makes it tough. And it's the commute to New York City, but it's worth it. It's it's where I want to be. It's, you know, like I said, I like that kind of hard work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want to start from the bottom and I want to earn it. And I want to work my way up and I want to be somebody who can make a difference in this industry and be a voice for women and tell the untold stories of women who are great athletes who have never had their stories told before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be the person to tell those stories because I know they're out there and I think they're really interesting. And I think other people will think they're interesting too. They just haven't had the opportunity to think they're interesting.
Yeah.
So that's my goal. I want to do this for a greater purpose than just sports. I want to do it for women and for just people in general. They deserve to be given great content,
mm-hmm.
and they're missing out on some good stuff.
Oh, well, women are unfairly missing out on a lot of things. And I mean, I just watch news all the time. This whole pay gap thing is crazy, and it seems like we're making strides in the right direction. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's the same thing with entertainment. Same thing with women in comedy. It's everywhere, and it's really not fair. And when you hear of those things, what are your thoughts of that? Like, why do you think that happens?
Well, remember I told you about that fire in my belly from before. Mm-hmm. Well, it ignites that fire on a whole different level than was even ignited for softball. So, mm-hmm. I don't know why, but it does something to me and I just want to make it right. Like it's mm-hmm. it's an injustice that mm-hmm. I want to help make right. And in sports especially, it's always been such a boys club. And mm-hmm. when you think about it logically, when you actually break it down for what actually happens,
mm-hmm.
you think about 51% of the population that is generally ignored and mm-hmm. in sports ignored almost altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I just don't understand it. I don't mm-hmm. get it. There are so many great stories. I feel like it's a gold mine mm-hmm. for a journalist who is looking to tell a great story. That's the objective of journalism, is to tell great stories. So sure, you know, there are great stories on the guy's side. I don't mm-hmm. doubt that for a second, but I know for a fact that there are also great stories on the girl's side
mm-hmm.
they haven't been told before.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing because, and especially with sports, because I think the main thing is because sports were invented or sports became a thing kind of out of entertainment in a way. People sure. liked seeing people who were highly skilled doing a certain thing and competing against each other because it was fun to watch people be proficient at such a high level, physical level. And men are naturally inherently more physically, I guess, not necessarily capable, because there's a lot of things women can do that men can't, but like in terms of strength, physical strength, men obviously, because that's why men can't hit women, it's the same thing. But at the same time, there's people like Ronda Rousey who are like, she's this incredible athlete. Like, there's been no one like her. And like, why can't they be on the same level playing field in terms of like, women are doing amazing things too, and they are something to be admired. They are, and also like a thing with athletes is we look up to them. They're these examples of something that is really hard to do. Being an athlete is a hard thing. Not everyone has that inherent ability. So like, why are men kind of favored in that? And it's not fair, because like, why? I mean, women fighting has become more popular. Ronda Rousey is more popular right now than any male fighter that I could think of, besides maybe that Irish crazy guy, but he seems like to be the fucking bad too. He seems to be awesome, but
yeah, I really do think it comes down to coverage. I think that the media really, and I hate to use the media because mm-hmm. it's numerous media outlets, build people up or tear them down. Mm-hmm. And if you aren't getting the content or the stories that are out there, mm-hmm. how are you going to know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's up to the media to inform the public. So if the media isn't informing the public about 51% of the population and 51% of the population in sports, mm-hmm. then they're not going to know. Mm-hmm. So it's up to us to bridge that gap. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm looking to do, just give people stuff that they haven't gotten before. And there certainly is a market for it too. There are plenty of niche markets in other things that succeed. So I know for certainly that women's sports has a niche market. And I think that was evident with the women's national team this summer, mm-hmm. If you followed any of the World Cup. But I was fortunate enough to go to the parade that they had on the Canyon of Heroes. After they won the World Cup, SI sent the interns to go, and there were thousands of people, tens of thousands of people lining the streets, men, women, and children alike, going nuts over this women's team. Mm. And that revealed to me that people are craving this stuff. They're craving something to get excited about for women. They're craving role models who are not just Ronda Rousey and Serena Williams, but lesser known role models in sports that aren't so popular or aren't so mainstream. Of course, they're popular, but mm-hmm. Soccer in America isn't as mainstream as...
Well, it's the common denominator everywhere else. Soccer's everywhere, everywhere else.
Right, right. But the point is that there is a market for it. Mm-hmm. And we need to start... We, the people in general, mm-hmm. the media, need to start seeing that not only... are there people who want this stuff, but there's a market for money to be made too. So this could mm-hmm. be a lucrative option. And I think that it's the fear of the unknown for a lot of people in these higher up positions, right. is that it's never really been done on a high level before, other than ESPNW, which is relatively new. So people see it as something that hasn't been done, maybe for a reason, but mm-hmm. I think you got to go for it. Just like with, you know, using the Ronda Rousey example, Dana White took a chance on Ronda Rousey. Dana White, the president of UFC, mm-hmm. had said in 2011 there would never be women fighting in the UFC. Mm-hmm. And then the next year he had Ronda Rousey as mm-hmm. headline of fight, and the rest is history. So I hate to get up on my soapbox about this.
No.
But
see, and I put myself at risk of talking about this because I guess it's something that I don't really think about. So I was kind of like, treading on water a little bit talking about that, because I really haven't thought about the best way, but like this in depth, or like the best way to put it. But yeah, it is interesting where they don't get the exposure that they deserve, or the coverage that they deserve. And obviously the more coverage of things, like, people would be interested in it, so like, why not? Like, and it could be a lucrative thing, so like, why not? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Exactly. You want to come on my team and start writing about women's sports?
I mean, I don't know if I would be the best candidate for that position, but I mean, a little education, I'm sure you'd be a good mentor in that vicinity. There's probably not many people more knowledgeable about it than you, but I mean, hey, I got nothing better to do.
Let's go. I could use you.
But anyway, so I've asked this question a lot, but I like it. So in terms of, we have, when you're ending college, you have this idea, or you have this, yeah, you have this idea of what the real world is, or like what you think it may be. And you, sometimes that can bring fear. Sometimes the unknown of it can cause anxiety. But what were your thoughts? Like, what was your personal impression of how you would deal with post-college, and how has that changed since being out of college in terms of how you thought you'd be able to handle it?
That's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard.
Yeah.
I thought I was prepared for it, mm-hmm. but the first 6 months out of college were some of the hardest months of my life, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Figuring out who I was, not only in the real world, as you say, but who am I without softball? It's something that I've done my whole life. It's something mm-hmm. that I've got a lot of my self-confidence from.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten a lot of my everything from, really. I've learned so much about life from the game, as I alluded to before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the thing I did with my dad. It was everything for me. So I was kind of thrust into this new life, this mm-hmm. commuting into the city every day, working 40 mm-hmm. hours a week, sitting at a desk all day, which was by far the hardest thing I had to adjust to, because working out was such part of my life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was always on the go. I was always working out, playing softball outside, going. And now I'm sedentary all of a sudden. That was mentally for me one of the hardest struggles. So it was a lot of things. It was being away from my support system. Like you were saying before, we were talking about my teammates. Like we traveled in as a pack all mm-hmm. the time. So it was this pack mentality where you were always with each other. You ate meals together. You had classes together. You traveled yeah. together. You played together. So I was without this huge support system that I had had for 4 years.
Yep.
And
that was a big reason as to why I wanted to make this show, because I felt like getting out of college was, I've said this so many times, the first time I didn't feel a part of something.
Yeah.
And I was craving some type of connection with people who were experiencing the same things I was.
And you see the zombies who come off the bus. And the last thing yeah. in my life I ever wanted to be was one of those zombies getting off the bus. But lo and behold, here I was,
mm-hmm.
a zombie with everybody else. So mm-hmm. I kind of have to make a conscious choice, a conscious effort not to be that way. Like, I need mm-hmm. to get out of that state of mind that, like, okay, it's just a grind. I got to keep going. But
The mundanity of just, like, the everyday, the right. routine, the...
But to find the beauty in things and mm-hmm. to find the appreciation,
you gotta make it interesting
in the little
yourself.
Things. And the times you do get to see your friends, you cherish those times
yeah.
and you make the most of it. And the times you do get to go outside or take a walk, like mm-hmm. you notice things that you didn't always notice before.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I just have to stop and like get out of my own head and realize that
yeah.
this world is a lot bigger than what I think in between my ears.
Yeah.
And just see it. My dad always talks about having a top-down approach to things. And he would tell this to me when I was playing softball. When I was going through a slump or something, he would say, you're only seeing it on a horizontal level. So you're only seeing it from the way it looks through your own eyes. You need to look at it from a top-down approach. So you need to take the bird's eye view, or how God sees it from heaven, and realize that in the grander scheme of things, what you're going through right now is nothing in comparison to what the rest of the world is going through, or what it's going to be like for you once you get through it.
Right.
So I keep that in mind with me when I, you know, go to work and it's tough and it's, I think, oh, it's so hard, but you got to just realize that you're blessed to be even alive and just to have these opportunities and to be young and able-bodied, and I can keep going on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only the beginning too.
Yeah.
Like, it's like we were talking before we got on the air about this, about how, you know, it doesn't always feel good in the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's a struggle, but we're just starting out. We're 22 years old and there's a lot of life left to live.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, we should really be enjoying this time, because this is supposed to be the best time. So,
yeah.
I
am totally, I'm totally with you on all of that, because you just said so many things that made me think of a lot. But I guess, yes, what is living? Because I'm always in my head too, and I'm like, I can't go on like this. And then there would be times where I'm just sitting in the car and I'm literally thinking of nothing. And I'm like, this is what being alive is. Not the worrying, not the struggling, just being, and just being okay with it. And it's kind of like what you said, the top-down approach. In the grand scheme of things, what I was just worrying about, what I was just thinking about, yes, maybe, there is benefits in having neurosis because that overthinking things can maybe propel you to learn more or can propel you to not make the same mistake in the future. But like, and I've talked about this in so many other different ways with Stobbs, not worrying, not dreading, not just being okay with what's happening. And sure, having a good plan of what you want to do in the future, but not so much being so hard on yourself.
Mm. Yeah. And trying to be and not always do. Yeah. That's a hard thing. There's a fine line between being and doing. And I think finding the proper balance between the two is mm-hmm. what makes a quality life. And sure, I probably don't know much about this, but that's kind of just, I had a friend who told me that once.
I feel like every single time I say something, I say, but I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Anytime I make an opinion or an argument with someone, I would be like, but I have no clue what I'm talking about. So take whatever I say. And this going forward, podcast listeners, take whatever I say with a grain of salt. I have no, I could change my mind about anything the next day. It doesn't matter. But anyway, we usually end with like a hopes for the future thing. You talked about a little. You talked about a little off air that you might not want to be around Pequannock for that much longer. It could be personal, professional. What do you foresee for yourself? What would you like to do besides some of the things you've touched on, or touch upon those things to a more thorough degree? I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, I don't know where I'll end up. I don't know mm-hmm. where I'll go or where I'll live.
Oh, I just unplugged my charger. It's fine. I thought it was the. Whew, okay, continue.
We didn't lose the interview.
No.
Good. Yeah, I mean, I love our little town. I think we were really blessed to live here and mm-hmm. grow up here, but I think there's so much more out there. And mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm going to live in Ishtabib or in California or somewhere else, some faraway land, but yeah. I want to go see places and I certainly want to explore this world. But mm-hmm. professionally, I want to be a creator, editor, producer of content for women and women in sports. Mm-hmm. I want to tell the stories that haven't been told. I want to be a voice for people who always haven't always had a voice. And I want to move human hearts with my words. That's kind of the thing that like I keep reminding myself. Like I write it on post notes sometimes and just remind myself that the goal for me is to move human hearts. That's what I want. I want people to see a story or hear about somebody's story and to feel it from their soul and not just from their head, and not just to get it in their brain, but to actually feel it in their heart. So that's my goal. And I don't know if that's on a large level at a place like Sports Illustrated or maybe on a smaller level, but I just know that I want to write and I want to move human hearts.
Wow. That's awesome. That's amazing.
Thanks. So we'll see what happens. Or yeah. Maybe none of that. Maybe I'll become a, I don't know. I went to Vermont this past weekend with my boyfriend and we met this guy there who his job is to sell used books in his barn and he lives by like a river in Vermont and like that seemed kind of appealing, so maybe I'll do that sometime.
Yeah, I have those feelings sometimes too where it's like obviously I have these goals of like wanting to make something of myself and leave behind this whatever, like do work that is meaningful, but then I'm have times where I'm like, but you know what, maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to like move to Iowa and just be a teach film at a middle school and just get really fat and just like eat at the same diner every morning. And
well, maybe you could do both.
I'm not trying to speak down about all the middle school film teachers in Iowa. I'm sure you're great people if there are any there. Yeah, right? Maybe I can do both.
Yeah, but find that balance between being and doing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, Kayla, you definitely have moved my heart in this with your words in this hour conversation we had. And I think that it is evident to anyone listening that you have a special voice and that it is evident that it will be used for great things in the future. So
thanks, Joe.
I very much thank you for providing that voice to my podcast. and it's been great catching up with you. Do you remember the first time I ever saw you? Do you want to know the first time? You were walking in the middle school, sixth grade. You were walking in the middle school hallway with Ruben Ramos, who was your boyfriend.
He was my first boyfriend.
And now he's going to be a priest.
Oh, is he really? Good for him.
At least that's what he was thinking about doing at the end of high school.
But Joe, this isn't accurate because we went to kindergarten together. So
that's
maybe
true.
You just don't remember me from
kindergarten.
Are you
sure I was in your class?
I don't think you were in my class.
I think it might have been in Ben's.
But we definitely
remember,
went to the same school.
I don't remember
school.
Anything from kindergarten.
I don't either.
When you're in kindergarten, you're pretty much a fish just swimming around with your brain isn't retaining anything.
Maybe we're all still just fish. But
yeah, right? Maybe this is a crazy dream.
I actually do not remember that moment from middle school.
I was walking behind you guys, and I was like, oh my God, they're dating. Because we were 12, and I was like, that's so middle school.
Yeah, he was a really nice boy. I don't ever remember what happened, but...
Yeah, well, you know.
I wish him all the best in his search for God.
Yeah. Well, Kayla, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, there she is, Kayla Lombardo. Huh? She's gonna succeed in life, right? Yeah. Oh my God, so much drive, so much passion for what she wants to do and what she's trying to do. It's very, very inspiring. Thank you, Kayla, for coming on and showing me what it really means to try to work for something. And thank you for being a female voice on the show. So yeah, see you guys next week. That was a weird pause. I'll see you guys next week. Gonna keep doing these, gonna keep banging them out. Maybe going to LA soon for an interesting interview. I don't know. It could be cool. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to jinx it. But I could be going to LA soon. So, and hopefully I'll have some. Hopefully, in my introduction, I'll be able to talk about my experience there. I'll see you guys next week with another conversation with somebody, some millennial, and I hope you guys have a good week.